This is KPCW. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday. It's April 3rd, 22 degrees and some snow showers here in Old Town Park City and 26 degrees in the Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Yeah, we're waking up to more of a winter scene once again out there with those chilly temperatures. And yes, some scattered snow showers that continue to make their way through the area. And guess what? The pattern is going to stick around with more of those off and on snow showers as we go throughout today. So it's not going to snow constantly all day, but we will have snow showers passing through pretty much at any point in time during the day today. High temperatures in the Heber Valley will climb only into the low to mid 40s for highs later on today, while in Park City we'll stay in the mid to upper 30s for highs and also having that chance of off and on snow showers throughout the day. Now, as we go into your Friday, guess what? We're going to repeat this pattern one more time. So we'll see those morning lows down into the low 20s out there for Park City and in the Heber Valley. Daytime highs will be in the mid to upper 40s in the Heber Valley, but we should climb only around 40 in Park City. And again, we'll have those off and on snow showers that will continue out there across the region as we go throughout your Friday. So we wrap up the work week with more winter-like conditions out there, but then we start to see more of a pattern change as we go into the weekend. The first thing you're going to notice is a lot more sunshine expected across the area for both Saturday and Sunday. We're going to see a lot of sunshine expected in the region. Now, temperatures on your Saturday morning start off frigid with those teens and right around 20 degrees for that morning low temperature, with high temperatures only in the low to mid 40s in Park City for your Saturday afternoon and highs in the low 50s in the Heber Valley. But now let's move on to the warmer weather now. With that sunshine, we'll see temperatures climbing to near 50 in Park City as we get towards your Sunday, with highs in the mid to upper 50s in the Heber Valley as we go throughout your Sunday. And again, the weekend is going to be full with a lot of sunshine, so we get to enjoy that. Now, Monday, we'll introduce a few clouds into the forecast. We'll call it partly cloudy skies for you, so not too bad. Morning lows will be down into the mid-20s in the Heber Valley, and we'll start off around the upper 20s in Park City. But high temperatures on your Monday, oh, that's looking nice. We're talking highs climbing into the mid to upper 50s for Park City, and high temperatures climbing into the mid-60s. Yeah, the mid-60s for the Heber Valley. And it gets even better. By Tuesday, partly cloudy skies, temperatures likely not dropping below freezing in both Park City or the Heber Valley for your Tuesday morning, with mid-30s in the forecast. And we'll see those high temperatures climbing into the mid-50s in Park City, and highs will climb into the low to mid-60s on Tuesday in the Heber Valley. Could have an isolated rain shower pass through, but for the most part, I think we're looking mainly dry out there for you. And then as we get into the middle of the work week, we're going to be looking at lots of sunshine for you. As we get into your Wednesday, we're going to be talking about those morning low temperatures down into the mid-30s, with highs only around 60 in Park City and high temperatures climbing into the mid-60s with a lot of sunshine as we get towards the Heber Valley on next Wednesday. So, yes, it's going to finish winter-like out there, Leslie, this week, but next week, hey, spring is really going to arrive.
Okay, I'm ready for it. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
And with a look in the backcountry, on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, we've got Nikki. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. This is actually Trent Meisenheimer.
Sorry. Yes, I do. Thanks.
No, you're fine. I'm covering for Nikki this morning. She actually is heading out skiing right now. The snow is actually pretty good. Anyway, so yeah, just like you heard, light snowfall up in the mountains, traced to a couple inches of new snow since yesterday. Good news is winds are behaving. However, it is switching out of the east right now. And nothing ever really good comes from an east wind here in the Wasatch. But fingers crossed that that wind doesn't actually pick up more than it is already. I think we'll be okay on this one. But yeah, again, east winds are notorious for creating some havoc through the range. Yesterday, we saw two human-triggered avalanches. Yesterday, both were fairly small. These were roughly 10 to 20 inches deep, so 1 to 2 feet deep. No more than about 50 or so feet wide. Nobody caught or carried in them, so that's good news. And they look like they failed because of just the new snow and a little bit of wind. And so we call these like a soft slab avalanche. We have seen a lot of snowfall over the past few days up in the mountains with, 1 to 2 feet of snow up there. Our first problem for today will be wind-drifted snow. And again, I mentioned that east direction, so some of these new drifts could actually be on the side of the mountain that we're not used to seeing. Mainly our flow comes from the southwest, west, and northwest, And today it's going to become east, southeast, or even east. So we're going to see drifts in some unusual places, perhaps. So as always, just watch and avoid pillowy features out there in the mountains, especially on steep slopes that show signs of wind loading. I mean, the best news about wind-drifted snow is a lot of times you can see it. It looks rounded, wavy, pillowy, or you can actively see it blowing snow out into the start zones of those avalanche paths. The second problem will be new snow. It seems that the past couple of days, the new snow has really stabilized quickly out there, as new snow does. If you are in some steep terrain, you could see sloughing or some of those soft slab avalanches that we mentioned too were triggered yesterday. The other thing is, this time of year, it's April, and if that sun comes out, it can like instantly change the snowpack. I mean, that sun is so warm out there, and we can create wet, loose avalanches in a matter of minutes out there. So, you know, if the sun comes out and you're out on a slope and it's powder, pay attention to how quick that slope actually becomes damp. And if the snow does become damp and you're starting to see roller balls, it's time to head out of that warm and sunny aspect and head to somewhere shady or colder, or just head home for the day. So in summary, the avalanche danger is moderate on all upper elevations. This is where human-triggered avalanches are possible, and that's going to be for wind-drifted snow or lingering new snow in some of the steep terrain. The danger definitely decreases with elevation, so if we get off those upper elevation ridgelines, we could expect some small avalanches in isolated areas, but for the most part, we have a low danger. So, you know, our advice right now when we have low danger, especially across the mid and low elevations, just use safe travel techniques, only expose one person to steep terrain at a time, and always ask yourself, if this slope avalanches, where do I go?
Okay, Trent, thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, I'll be checking in with Summit County Council Member Megan McKenna. Later on in the hour, local author Carly Stenmark talks about her second book. This one is titled Heart, Get Ready. And finally, Kimball Arts Center Executive Director Aldi Milliken with an update on the current exhibit, plans for the new Arts Center, and this year's Arts Festival. Taking a quick look at some local news now, Mountlands Community Housing Trust continues to pursue low-income tax credits to redevelop the Holiday Village and Parkside Apartments in Park City. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more about that.
In 2023, Park City officials approved Mountainland's plan to demolish and rebuild the decades-old affordable housing complex located along Kearns Boulevard and Holiday Ranch Loop Road. Mountainland's Community Housing Trust Executive Director Jason Glidden expressed disappointment that the nonprofit was unable to secure low-income housing tax credits from the federal government in its most recent application.
We fell just short. We had a really strong application. We actually fell about 10 points short, which is really close. So what we've been doing is refining our project a little bit and to increase our scoring. So we feel that we have actually a better application being submitted this year.
Glidden said Mountainlands will submit a new funding application later this month and expects to know if they've been selected in June. Low-income housing tax credits are distributed by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development to states based on population. The Utah Housing Corporation uses an application process with a scoring rubric to allocate the funding to specific projects. Glidden said Mountainlands is hoping to secure $2 million for the redevelopment project, referred to as HOPA.
So it's a very competitive process. And so, you know, for us, we felt really great that, you know, while we didn't get funded, you know, we were very, very close. We were second. So we were right there. So, again, we're very optimistic for this year.
The project approved by Park City planners involves 317 affordable apartments across seven buildings. Mountainland staff previously said they plan to rent to people making around 50% of Summit County's area median income, or AMI. 50% of Summit County's AMI equates to around a $53,000 salary for one person, according to 2024 data. The timeline for the HOPA project will depend on the government funding. Glidden couldn't commit to a start date for work to begin, but said the project will take several years to complete. Construction would be completed in phases, so existing residents could continue living there. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
The Summit County Council met briefly yesterday. In the studio with a recap, I have Councilmember Megan McKenna. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So a short meeting, but let's run through some of the noteworthy news there. The Park City Fire District announced a new fire chief, Peter Emery, a longtime firefighter and deputy chief. This is really the changing of the guard for Chief Bob Zanetti's retirement, I think, as of May 1st. So why did the Fire District Control Board promote Emery?
Well, I think this is something that they had really, since Chief Zanetti came on, something that they were interested in continuing a legacy. And so I think this was something they were hoping to do, to transition into someone that was ready for the role.
All right. And so, I mean, going forward, you confident then on the new leadership?
Yes. We're of course we will miss Chief Zanetti and appreciate his service, but we're all looking forward to working with Chief Emery.
Okay. Also, County Manager Shane Scott's contract was discussed. You council voted for a 4% merit raise after his performance review this year. So who does that review, and what did they have to say about it?
Good question. We did approve his merit increase, and that was based on as a council, decided to do a third-party 360-degree review, and we worked with the Human Resources Department and contracted with a party that reached out to outside stakeholders, as well as key leaders within the county and staff and elected officials. It was quite the process, and we were really impressed with his evaluation and how it turned out, and that's why we approved the merit increase.
Okay, and the average merit increase for other county employees was 3%. He received 4. Why?
Again, back to the review. His review and his scores came out really high, and we wanted to make note of that.
Okay. Council Chair Tanya Hansen announcing a county legislative group will be putting forth new language for House Bill 356. This is basically that redistricting of the Summit County Council, among others. Governor Cox has said that changes will be made to this bill in a special session. What would you like to see happen?
Yeah, that's a good question. And really what we'd like to do is really hear from residents and from voters. I think there's a couple key ideas that we'd specifically like to hear about. The governor did sign the bill, so we will have districts. But some of those issues, which Wasatch County too has brought to the governor's attention, I think the number of districts that we would have, would there be any seats at large? As the bill sits now, that it would require all 5 seats to be districted. So that's a question we'd love to hear back from the community. The makeup of the districting committee, so that's the committee that will be putting together the map. Currently, as it stands, it's the mayors of Summit County and one unincorporated representative. So we'd love to hear feedback on that, and possibly include more voices from the community, or more representation from the unincorporated county, which is the majority of our population. And then we'd also like to weigh in on how the districts are assigned. Currently, they're assigned by lot, which means, you know, at random, once the districts are assigned, we think it would be more appropriate if councilors were assigned to districts that they were in, and if there was a transition or perhaps temporarily at large until the term is up, and then opening up a district seat. And so there's lots of ways I think that we could improve this, and I think it's important to note, because, you know, we've talked quite a bit about 356, and I wrote an editorial a couple of weeks ago. I'm certainly not opposed to districting, but I think it's more how this bill came about and the lack of community public input on the process. And so that's what we'd really like to just hear from the community. And as Chair Hansen mentioned, we'll have two opportunities, the COG meeting next, not next week, the following week on April 15th, the COG, the Council of Governments, which our Park City Mayor Nan Worrell now chairs, she'll be directing a discussion, and we'll open it up for public comment to hear what the community would like our legislators and governor to know and to weigh in on. So that'll be April 15th. And then our council meeting on April 23rd, we'll also open that up for public comment. And so really what we'd like to do is to go into that interim session and provide some feedback and hopefully have a seat at the table to address some of those concerns that we have.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, you did submit that opinion piece to the Park Record. The takeaway, I think, was that Summit County voters chose this form of five at-large council seats in an election back in 2006, and we shouldn't have an outside lawmaker telling us what we can and can't do. But how do we get around the fact that there are many in Summit County who feel like their conservative voices and beliefs are not being heard? I mean, if those voices aren't represented on the council, then they are being overlooked.
Yeah, I think representation matters. I think it's really important. And I think all of us on the council are open to ways that we can better represent all constituents. And so that's certainly something that we want to discuss. And I think something we should always strive for. So again, just going back to how this was brought about, I think if we could have, as it was, you know, back in 2006, put together a committee, like anything, I think there's certainly pros and cons to districting and how we go about it and how those districts are made. So I think we all would have just liked a little bit more time and public input in the process.
Yeah. So at this point, do we know what those districts could look like? I mean, it's going to be based on population or geography or?
Yeah, I mean, based on population and where the bill stands now with five seats and all of those required to be districted with five seats, they would, you know, they all have to be within 10% of the population. So it would likely break down to two seats in the Snyderville Basin, a North Summit, a South Summit, and a Park City district. And of course, there would have to be some, you know, overlap into the basin just to get into that 10%. Population.
Yeah. One big thing that Council Chair Hansen said that you're not doing is advocating for the bill to be repealed. That won't happen. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, actually, our deputy county manager last night mentioned that it is a possibility if legislators wanted to veto it at this point, but that's entirely up to them. We don't expect that to happen. As the governor mentioned in his veto letter, he did sign the bill, but would open it up in the interim session. So that's what we're expecting.
All right. Speaking of elections, the Summit County Democrats are holding an organization convention next week. Can you tell us when, where, and what happens here?
Yeah, so this is the annual convention for our Summit County Democrats. It will take place at Ecker Hill at 6 o'clock. You can show up at 5 o'clock. There will be more, there is more information on the Summit County Democrats website. And that would be a great opportunity to talk to local leadership. I believe the deadline is actually today to nominate someone or put your name in the hat for the board there. But again, all that information is on the website. I look forward to attending.
So what day is that then?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's Thursday the 10th.
Okay.
And again, that's at Ecker Hill Middle School.
All right. Summit County accepting applications for the Housing Authority Board. What are people applying for, since the bylaws aren't yet official?
That's right. We're still working on the bylaws for that. But at this point, it looks like it'll be a board of 5 members, 3 county councilors, and 2 representatives from the community at large. And I think it is a work in progress, but I think this initial year is really just kind of getting it up and running and setting some of those goals and expectations going forward. Jeff Jones had mentioned and did budget for a housing director that would kind of oversee that, and so in collaboration with the housing authority and that position, I think they would kind of determine, you know, what their goals would be.
Okay. Sounds like you're going to attend a statewide health department meeting in the coming days. You spoke to the council about the federal cuts to the remaining COVID era funding. So what's that done to our health department locally?
Right. Well, last week, as many probably heard on the news, the Department of Health and Human Services notified all of the local health departments that the CDC, by direction of the president, revoked the remaining COVID funding. And this was budgeted through June of next year, 2026. So this will have a significant impact on all of our local health departments. I think locally here, it's close to $500,000. It wouldn't impact every program, but will certainly have a big impact on what the county health department has already budgeted for the next year. But I am confident in our health director, Phil Bondurant, and his team. I'm just constantly amazed at the work that they do. And I know they'll continue to communicate and navigate these challenging times. But that conference, as you mentioned, that's the Utah Association of Local Boards of Health. They'll be meeting next week, and I'm sure this will be a big topic of conversation as all of our health departments figure out how to move forward.
All right. So are we at risk of losing personnel? Because my understanding is about 60% of our personnel in the health department is grant funded.
Yeah, I think that is certainly a concern. The Board of Health will be meeting on Monday of next week, and so I'm sure we'll hear more at that time. I hope that's not the case, but I think that is certainly a concern.
Okay. This just came in this week, the county receiving 6 responses to its request for proposal for a public-private partnership on the Klein-Dolly property. What do you think makes the most sense here? I mean, we spent a lot of time and money on a planning charrette for the property, talked about how it could become a transit-oriented development. Sounds like we're moving away from that.
Yeah, I think, it's not a huge parcel. As Peter mentioned on your show yesterday, a portion of that is really not developable. And so mixed use on that is, that's what we'll just have to see. And so I'm really excited to see, what these 6 proposals are and what they were able to come up with. And I think that's where the council last year got to is like, hey, let's kind of leave it open and see what the applicants can do with that space. But I think we're all hopeful that there will be some mix of housing on the parcel.
All right. Also wanted to mention, I know as a former high school science teacher, you've been out collecting signatures to try and overturn HB 267 by referendum by putting it to a public vote. Any idea how it's going in terms of signature collecting?
Yeah, this is an ongoing effort. And, I think the last I heard, they had submitted over, I think, around 130,000 signatures. Of course, it's challenging, and as they verify those, many will likely be thrown out. So I think you always want to try to get in more than are required. The 200,000 is the goal, and so I think we're in the final 2 weeks of collecting signatures for that. So I think maybe halfway there.
Yeah. What are you hearing from those you're approaching to sign this?
A lot of support. Our public employees have been targeted in this bill that prohibits their right to collective bargain. And I think there's a lot of support in the state that our public employees serve. This includes teachers, but also firefighters and police officers, our municipal and county employees. And so I've heard a lot of support, and that's why I think the move to get this one on the ballot is important, because I think most Utahns do support our public workforce.
Yeah. And any reaction to the news that the Sundance Film Festival is leaving?
Yeah, well, as someone who grew up with the Sundance Film Festival, it certainly is an end of an era, and especially in my time as an educator, I really enjoyed that partnership with Sundance and bringing it to young people and future generations here. And so it is sad to me, I think it's a disappointing to a lot of us, but I think we'll persevere and we'll see what this next era brings.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
I think I'll just say that these are certainly challenging times, and I think kindness goes a long way. I would just encourage folks to stay engaged. If you see something, say something. Assume good intent. Reach out to your local representatives if you have any questions or concerns. And I think together, we will get through these challenging times. And hopefully we'll hear from residents about HB 356 okay. if they have any comments.
Okay, Megan McKenna, Summit County Council Member. Thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
Well, longtime Park City resident, retired nail salon owner, has published her second book titled Heart Get Ready. It's another memoir, but focused on chronicling the challenges of taking care of her former husband's unexpected Alzheimer's diagnosis. She joins me now in the studio, Carly Bennett-Stenmark. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Leslie.
Carly, just start by telling us a little bit about your background. I mean, you've worked in Park City for years, you raised your kids here.
Right. Yeah, I came to Park City with four little kids back in 1983 and, started raising them here and ended up being I've always been in the beauty business. So I ended up, opening my own salon and did that for a few years and then went to work for other people. So before I retired, I was working at Silver Shears. And I'd been there for 20-something years, so, yeah. But I always wanted to write, and I wrote my first book about my journey with my clients. And then I met Ken in 1999, and we hit it off, so to speak. And then in the fall of 2018, I started noticing some changes in Ken as far as... I really chalked it up to him just, being forgetful, because he was always a little forgetful. It's kind of like the card that has the guy with the open fridge. It says, honey, where's the butter? And the fridge is full of butter. I just thought that was it, because I thought, well, we're getting older, but in actuality, the things got worse. And so he was diagnosed in June of 2020. With early onset Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. And although he was 68 when he was diagnosed, they classified it as early onset. And after the MRI, looking at his brain and the buildup of the protein in the hippocampus, they said that it was early onset and he had it for 10 to 15 years. Mm. And that was a shock,
yeah.
For sure.
Well, As you mentioned, your husband was Ken Stenmark, and for those of us who have been around, we'll remember him as a golf professional at Park City Municipal. I know he was a ski instructor as well, a musician, and a member of Mensa International. So he's a brilliant man, right?
Yes,
which is, I think, even harder to understand. It's like, how come, you know, somebody so smart lose?
Yes, that was it. You know, I couldn't believe it. I really couldn't. I mean, of all the things that could happen to us along our life together, I honestly was blindsided by this diagnosis. I'm just hearing the words, you know, and by the time he was diagnosed, it was fifth stage.
So where does your story start with Heart Get Ready?
It begins with me meeting Ken and kind of about our life and us golfing and skiing and having a great time. And then I go into, you know, him losing his wallet and his phone, and then things got more serious, which is when I decided to take him to a neurologist.
As I mentioned, this is your second book. The first one, More Than a Manicure, The Nail Files, a really a fun look back at the early days of Park City. I'm guessing this one was a little bit more difficult to write?
It was difficult. You know, I've had people ask me, say to me, you know, I bet it was cathartic. Well, yes and no. You know, there were times when I was writing it and thinking about the memories and, you know, our life together. And Ken was such a great guy, you know, and he just made life fun. And but then there was the harder parts, realizing that there was no cure for this disease and I would eventually lose Ken.
Yeah. And you mentioned he was diagnosed in June of 2020. He actually passed away in December of 2022, so there wasn't a whole long time between that.
No, 2.5 years from clear diagnosis.
Yeah. So. And is that the cause of death, Alzheimer's, or is it
yes.
other?
No, it was Alzheimer's, and that's what they put on the death certificate, too. So, yeah.
So were you able to keep him at home, or did he require help?
You know, in the beginning, that was my goal. You know, with the help of Jewish Family Service, I wanted to keep Ken at home. And I thought I could, but things became it wasn't safe. You know, he began to wander, and sometimes at 4 in the morning, I found him walking down the middle of 224. And then, you know, setting the stove on fire. You know, he never touched a stove in the 26 years we were together. I even had childproof knobs put on it, and I could barely figure them out, you know, but he was smart, so he lived the last 15 months of his life in a memory care facility. I eventually had to put him there.
Yeah. And there are just tragic stories of caregivers. And I think what we see is that as a caregiver, you get so caught up in taking care of your loved one that you kind of forget to take care of yourself. How did you manage that?
You know, that's absolutely true. And, it wasn't until people started saying, Carly, you know, you've lost too much weight. We can tell you're not doing well. You've got to take care of yourself. And I still didn't really do it, you know. Ken was my top priority, and even when he was in the care facility, I was down there all the time, you know. And he never forgot me, and of course I didn't give him the chance to. But yeah, it, you know, I still talk to caregivers and say, you have to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And you do. But it was very difficult for me to do that.
Yeah. So this book, writing this book, was it for yourself or was it for others going through something like this?
You know, honestly, that's the main reason I wrote the book. Because when Ken was diagnosed, I had never known anybody with Alzheimer's disease. And then the person I loved most in the world gets this horrible disease. And I didn't know what to do. So, you know, I wanted other people in similar situations to know, you know, kind of what I went through and, hoping it will help.
Yeah. And as we know, Alzheimer's, there is no cure. And I guess once it's diagnosed, I mean, it's really too late to do anything about it?
You know, right now, I understand they're coming out with some other medications to slow down the progression. And I'll be honest, they had another medication that they put Ken on, the neurologist did, to slow down the progression. And then I heard of a study in Salt Lake where he would go and live for 30 days. This was, of course, prior to him going into care. So I got him into that study. He qualified for that. And he was in the study until July 31st, and September 20th, he went into a care facility. I don't know if it would have happened anyway, but he seemed much worse when he got home from the study. So that was hard.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, he was an accomplished musician, and I've heard, in fact, I saw a film years ago just about the part of our brain that deals with music is one of the last parts to be affected. Did you do anything with music therapy for him?
Yes, I did it through Jewish Family Service. They made an iPod at the time and filled it with songs, and the facilitator for my caregiver support group, which I would highly recommend to somebody who's going through this, she did it, but she also put Ken's songs on it. So when he would listen to it, his music would come on. And interestingly enough, he didn't recall his music written recently before he was sick. He remembered everything from back in the day. And, you know, he had hits, you know, he was an accomplished musician, you know. And so when I was looking for a title for this book, it was very difficult, because the first thing when people find out you're writing a book, they say, what's the title? So I wanted to get that in place. I probably changed it 10 times. And one night I was just sitting there going through my phone and looking at my music, and I came across Ken's list of songs. So this was a standout hit, Heart Get Ready, for him back in the 80s. And so I named the book that because I thought it was so appropriate. And then all the chapters are Ken's songs, too.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
So songs that, not that he recorded, what did he sell the songs? Or?
Yes. He was under contract to write 7 songs a year with Warner Chappell Music out of Los Angeles. So he would pitch them, so to speak, and then, you know, cross his fingers and hope somebody bought them.
Yeah. And I guess, what did you learn about, this devastating disease? Mm.
A couple of key things that I learned. One was to never argue with them. You know, instead, just agree. I mean, yes, honey, became the top 2 words of my vocabulary, honestly. And also, and it was very difficult to do this, was you're not supposed to say remember to them. And, you know, how many times do we say that when we're speaking? Hey, remember when, you know, that was hard. And then, you know, I got very good at redirecting him. And I have to say that the 15 months he was in the facility, he thought he worked there, because that's what he did in Minnesota before he came. He worked in a memory care facility right out of college because he had a degree, his master's in psychology. Mm. And so when people would go to visit him, he would tell them, you know, he always called me Bennett, and I always called him Stenmark. So he would say, I live here now because I'm working here, but Bennett still lives in our place in Park City. And he was always happy. He was never mean, and I know that can sometimes happen, but Kenny was just Kenny, you know, right up until the end.
Well, I know the book, of course, available online. Mm-hmm. We have it here at the local bookstores as well. And
yes, it'll be at Dolly's. It's not quite there yet. June 8th, I'll be there talking about it and doing a signing there. And that was the first they could get me in. They're busy.
Okay. Anything else, Carly, you wanted to mention about Heart Get Ready?
Well, I would like to take the opportunity to thank Stacy Domalski, my editor, and also Katie Mullally for her publishing skills, and really thank, you know, give a shout out to Michelle Raynor of Cosmic Design for this incredible cover, because it truly represents how I felt. And I know it was a challenge for her, so I appreciated her work on that.
All right, best of luck with the book. Carly, great to see you. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie.
And that's author Carly Bennett Stenmark. In the studio now with an update from the Kimball Arts Center, I have Executive Director Aldi Milliken. Good morning, Aldi.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you hosted your fourth annual art soiree last weekend, and it sounds like you did really well.
Yeah, it was a great evening. I mean, I always talk about mission-driven fundraising as something that should be like a program almost, as we're also generating funds for our classes and our exhibitions. And there was a lot of energy. People had a great time. People get to dress up and be a little fancy. We have creative clothes and everything, so it was a really great evening.
Is this the center's largest fundraiser that you do?
This is the largest individual fundraiser. I guess in a way you could argue that the Arts Fest is one of our largest fundraisers, but the soiree, which is a new thing that we've developed since I started at the Kimball, has really taken hold, and I think it's getting better and better every year. And again, we have an amazing committee. Mary Burke and Heather Peter Roy on our committee, board members, did a fantastic job of organizing the entire event.
All right. And so the money's donations, auction items, tickets?
Auction items, tickets. We had actually our whole ceramics community rallied around this. So all the artists and the students that we have also made work, and then they were table settings. So we're always looking for ways to infiltrate like the creative opportunities that we have. And so the students really rallied. We have this incredible exhibition, Traces, which is a representation of what's going on in the ceramics world right now, and it was just so much fun. So they took over and really added their voices to the entire event.
Okay, and you also had a couple of high value art items that actually
we had some high value art, and then we also had an anonymous donor that really chipped in that just sort of surprised us all. And you know, it was a beautiful moment when I got that text and everyone stood up and clapped and just rallied around the arts. And I think now, you know, we really got to stop taking the arts for granted, you know, and there's a lot of subtext to that statement in a way. So it's time to kind of step up and give and support the arts here in Park City, Summit County, and all of Utah.
Okay, we'll save the date April 4th, 2026 for next year.
Exactly.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the current exhibits, Traces. Tell us what this is about.
So Traces is featuring 9 internationally acclaimed ceramic artists. It also is coincides with the festival down in Salt Lake called NSECA, which is a large conference which brought together as many as 10,000 ceramic artists from around the country. And so we wanted to showcase these 9 female voices or incredible storytellers and the work. You know, they're making large sculpture, they're making, you know, very intricate work, they're doing cultural references. Brie Ruiz is on display. It's almost like ceramic painting, like this incredible work, amazing installation. She was also our feature artist for the soiree, so we're kind of looking for these sort of cross-pollination opportunities. But the show is amazing. It's on until May 18th. And so, you know, obviously it seems like a long way away, but the time goes fast. So don't miss that event. And I will say one thing that was really kind of exciting is the NSECA leadership came up from Salt Lake and were able to sort of look at our show on Sunday. And they were like really impressed both with the quality of the work of those artists, but also the quality of the student work. In fact, one of them, anecdotally, the president of the whole NSECA conference, this huge organization, said that one of the 6th grade artworks from one of the 6th day students from Park City Day School was their favorite work in the entire conference. So if you want to see what that means, you should come and check out the show, because it's really kind of cool. It's great work.
Because you also have on display that Wasatch Back
The Wasatch Back Student Art Show. And again, because we're planning ahead, we're able to work with the teachers in the community. We're able to sort of curate a museum-quality exhibition for our kindergartners all the way up to some of our high school students. And it's a really wonderful opportunity to see some great work in the community.
And that stays up till May 18th
Also up to May 18th. Don't miss that. You don't want to regret that. I'm not seeing it.
Okay, what's the latest on the new building and that 5 acres?
So we're still continuing to work with the city and with the mayor to specifically kind of get to that next phase. Obviously, there was a small, I don't know, setback isn't the right word, but a clarification, if you will, with the city reissuing the RFP. That's going to be due today or tomorrow, I think, so that developers in the area or across the country will express their more clear interest in partnering with the city to make that development happen. And now the phase that we're trying to sort of share with the city is that it's time to actually just articulate the piece of property that the Kimball should own. We're really working towards that ownership piece, like buying the property. And I think if we don't get that clear in the next, say, several months, you know, the mayor is expressed in her State of the Union address that that the Kimball was a huge priority for her. But I think if we don't get that, then we're going to be looking elsewhere and, you know, across the county or in other places to really find our permanent home. And, you know, this is something that we're working towards. We're working on our building program internally to really define what we want to do. And so everything is aligned, actually. Everything should triangulate on getting a contract by this summer. The mayor has put down a really aggressive timeline, but we need the five council members to just to really dig in and say, hey, the Kimball's important. It's time to make the contract. We know we can work around that on the property. Let's make this happen.
So at one point you were talking maybe just a land lease. Now you're talking about buying it again?
Yeah, I really like the land lease option economically, because we can take the money that we would purchase into the building. I think that was a harder conversation for people here. They just couldn't quite get their head around it. And you know, as long as the city was going to honor the 2017 LOI, which is the original agreement that we all kind of came to terms with, that was the board decided at the time, you know, I'm okay with that. And so if that's what direction we want to go, that's fine. I don't want to rewrite what we've already established. Let's honor that 2017 LOI. Let's honor the price, the space, and then the amount of property, and then go forward.
All right. So, well, here's something you think after we get those RFPs back?
I think the city has to, there's a transparent and separate process that the city has. You know, the team, I don't even know the team, whoever was assessing and reviewing those RFPs from before, will do that again. That will happen during April. And then they'll make a recommendation to the city. Then the city councilors and the mayor will decide on which path they want to go. So in a way, the setback of a reissue of the RFP doesn't really hurt the timeline. It does help clarity. I think that was a good move. But really, it's that commitment. Let's stop discussing, thinking. We're losing opportunity. Actually, time is actually not working in our favor. You know, building prices are going up, et cetera, like all this other stuff. So let's make this commitment. Nothing is going to be perfect. Let's just do it and move on.
Well, I got to get your reaction to the Sundance Film Festival leaving, because at one point the Kimball and the Sundance were going to be neighbors.
Yeah, this is tragic for me. I mean, Sundance was important for my coming to Park City. I think it was emblematic of the types of culture that I was trying to achieve with the Kimball. And so I really looked to them as a North Star and in excellence in storytelling. I have been really following sort of the attitudes of what's in the context of what we have here in Utah. And I do think that the context of the legislature, some of the legislative bills, you know, these other things really had an effect. And I think we should not discount that. This is not just about business. This is about the context of which you're performing in a sense, and Sundance is performing in the context of Utah. And after 40 years, you have to think, wait a minute, is what we are doing matter? Does it count? And I think that they were probably looked at that and decided that Boulder was a better context for them. You know, we are going to succeed as a community if we decide the arts are important, and that's the next phase is really what we need to do to think about how we can sort of support art excellence. I do want to thank the team that were part of the Sundance committee that tried to really sort of formulate what Sundance wanted. So Jennifer Wesselhoff, the mayor, and that whole team, I think, did a great job of representing us. I would have liked to see maybe a few more artists on that committee, but in a sense, I think that was a great effort that they did, and I really appreciate the work that they did.
Okay.
So thank you to them.
Just a minute left here. So what about this year's Arts Festival? It's going to happen on the same weekend as a soccer tournament?
No, that was, you know, I we, no, the soccer tournament's actually in 2026, so we pushed our date in support of the soccer tournament, because that was sort of the only time that they could do that. But in 2025, it's April 1st to April 3rd. August 1st to August 3rd on Main Street. And we invited the top 16% of the more than 1,100 artists. You know, it's a blind jury. It's a very difficult art fest to get into. It's one of the most competitive in the country. And so it's a shame that we can't have everybody, but we really want to provide the best quality. There's 55 first-time artists, so we're really expecting, you know, a really awesome event here on Main Street again.
All right, and then you've got, 10 local artists as well? That's a percentage of the numbers?
Yeah, exactly. There'll be at least 10 local artists. There's 4 emerging artists who are young artists. So, you know, my goal with the Arts Fest was to have 20% turnover so that there'd be new artists every year, and that's hard. You know, you're asking someone to give a spot up to someone else in a way, and so that's just a way to make it great for our audiences.
Okay, I'm about out of time. Anything else you wanted to mention real quick?
Just want to thank you and KPCW, and come on down to see Traces.
Okay. Aldi Milliken is the executive director of Kimball Arts Center. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.